Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And I'm really excited to welcome the program. I was such a huge fan of Howard Stern my entire life. Jackie, the joke man, Martling. Jackie, thanks for calling and thanks for taking the time to come on Twitter. If you go ahead and follow on Twitter, you get a joke every day. I think that's fantastic. So where'd you come up with that idea?
I'll tell you, I found a program that automatically will launch, you know, to sit there and send something the same day, every day, at the same time. It's a tough thing to do. So I found this program that you just load stuff in and it'll send it whenever you want. So every day at 4:20 p.m., which is, 4:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, which is International Marijuana Time. It's a time that's easy to remember. Everybody knows 4:20, whether or not they smoke pot or anything. It's a common thing. And so every day at 4:20, you get a 140-character joke from me. All you got to do is follow me at Jackie Martling, JACKIEMARTLING. Now, you wouldn't believe what I had to go through to get my own name as a Twitter handle. Somebody had already taken it. Somebody else had another handle that was verified as me, and it wasn't me. You wouldn't believe I had to jump through hoops to get my own name. But now I got it. It's verified, and it's at Jackie Martling. And if you follow me, you get a joke every day at 4:20. And what's really fun is there's a lot of two-line jokes, but I've also taken longer jokes and managed to squeeze them into 140 characters. And it's really fun. It's kind of challenging, and it's a hoot. I've been doing it for almost 2 years, and people really love it, you know?
Well, absolutely, and I was amazed right when I first emailed you and you emailed me back. I was getting all this information of the things that you're plugging and you're doing, you're traveling, you're doing so many different shows. How do you have the energy, Jackie, to do all this? I mean, just you see.
Well, the truth of it is I don't have the energy. There's actually three of me. I was born triplets, and I send the two stupid ones out to do the comedy gigs, and I stay home and count the money. Now, what you're talking about, the email list. Anybody who wants to get jokes in their email box, it's jokeland@AOL.com, jokeland@AOL.com. If you email me, you automatically get jokes once or twice a month. Everybody's all over me because I still have AOL as my email address, but what can I do? I'm not a youngster. I like AOL. I've had jokeland@AOL.com forever. One day I'll switch it. I couldn't get Jackie Martling at Gmail. That got me too crazy because people steal my name. You know, I'm not Howard, but people love taking Jackie Martling, you know?
Well, Howard is just such an unbelievable experience for you. And specifically enough, you were telling me that the last time you were on a show was about 2 years ago, but you are a radio guy yourself. Did you ever think you'd have your own show?
You know what? I never knew I was going to, but I'm very excited that I do. My radio show's Tuesday nights from 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. It's an hour of jokes once a week. It repeats at 8 p.m. that night, and again at 1 a.m. in the morning later that night. It's on Sirius Howard 101, Sirius XM Howard 101. It's on one of Howard's channels. We've been doing it for over 6 years. We just did our 340th show. It's an hour of dirty jokes once a week, and people love it. And if you like jokes, it's the best show in the world. If you don't like jokes, it stinks.
But you like to have that niche where they have a radio station, especially satellite radio, where you can go in and really have something that no one else has. There's not many joke shows, are there, Jackie?
I don't know if there are any. And I still come up with jokes that we never did before. We've done almost 10,000 jokes in 6 years, and I still come up. We actually call it a nunt, N-U-N-T. It's called a nunt, a joke that has never been on the show before. Sometimes I have like three on the same night, and my partner, Ian Carr, just can't believe it. You know, I mean, he's a good guy. He's got his own video production company, and they just did all the promotional videos for Andy Samborg's new show. And he's a very successful guy and has a whole successful career as a director and video producer. But he lives to do the hour of jokes that we do every week, and we just love it. It's just so much fun, man.
And did you learn a lot from Howard being on his show for so many years to do your own radio show?
You know, I'm sure I learned so much. I think the main thing you learn from him is to just be you. You know, I still get on the air and act like an idiot, but for the most part, you know, I should know better because, you know, he's just such a natural, you know, we helped each other's sense of humor a lot, I think, you know what I mean? He wasn't as punchline and joke oriented, and he still rejects it, but I brought something to the table. You know, we had a lot of fun. It was a great time.
And you were telling me also an interesting story that from the days of Howard Stern, you had a phone line, and it's still around where you can hear lots of things about what's going on with you, right, Jackie?
No, I had the phone line 4 years before I met Howard.
4 years? Oh, wow.
When we started comedy on Long Island in 1979, me and my friend Richie Minervini started comedy in a restaurant, the upstairs corner of a restaurant in Huntington on Long Island that was co-owned by Jerry Cooney, the fighter, his brother. And that grew into the East Side Comedy Club. And today that guy, Richie Minervini, is Kevin James' opening act and is standing in the movies. And Richie actually has a pretty big part in the new movie Grown Ups 2. And I started making my own albums. I started another two comedy clubs on Long Island called Governor's Comedy Shop and the Brokerage Comedy Club. And I recorded my own albums, and in 1982, I was in Washington, D.C., and a guy told me that there was a crazy man on the radio that just got fired and that he was moving to New York. So I sent my three comedy albums to Howard Stern, care of NBC, completely blind. And a couple of months later, like a month or two later, he called me and said, listen, we listened to your albums. We think you're funny. Why don't you come join us on the show today? I went into NBC. And at the end of the day, with him and Robin and Fred, they said, wow, you're a lot of fun. Why don't you come back next week? So I came back the next week, and I was there for one day a week for 3 years. And then he went to meetings, and I went to 5 days a week as head writer.
Jackie, when you were talking about specifically writing for the show and having to really work on your feet, it was a challenge, wasn't it?
It was so much fun. It was something I actually created what I did. I worked one day a week for Howard at NBC, and I was slowly giving him notes and ideas here and there, and it morphed into more to where I was actually giving him lines as we went along. And then we went to K-Rock, and we went to mornings. My job was to sit there and feed him lines as we went along in the heat of the program, like in real time. And it was just amazing. It was just exciting. I'd put something in front of him, and he could work it into the conversation. It was absolutely seamless. Nobody had any idea I was writing this stuff. It was as if Howard and Robin were having a conversation, and I was in on the conversation, only when I had something funny or interesting to say, instead of saying it, I'd write it down, and Howard would say that too. And it was a great thing. For 15 years, it was spectacular, and we got so famous, and we just went. Was absolutely terrific.
Well, absolutely, Jackie. It's something that being able to be part of this, it must have been amazing, and it's something that I think you've taken with you in your whole career to say, hey, I was able to really make Howard who he is, and specifically the writing end of things.
I didn't make him who he was, but I helped.
Yeah.
I absolutely helped, and it was one of those things where every couple of years, people said, boy, you guys are so great, but how long can it last? And he just kept reinventing himself with the TV shows and the books and the movie and then another TV show. It was just amazing. Every time we turned the corner, we went further. At one point, we were number one in, like, over 50 markets. And it just was really, really exciting, and I loved it. And along the way, I made 6 comedy CDs that are still being played like crazy on Sirius XM, on Raw Dog, and on my radio show, and those CDs have so much popularity. They're available from iTunes. They're Olio CDs, O-G-L-I-O, Olio Dirty Joke CDs. I don't know if you call them CDs anymore because they get downloaded on iTunes and Amazon. But it's great because I have a whole popularity with the new generations because these jokes don't know any age. Like, I heard these jokes when I was 20, and people told them when they were 40, and people tell them when they're 50. I got fans that are like 25 years old that hear those CDs and just go nuts. You know, there are a lot of it's politically incorrect, but it's just really silly fun. You know what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely. And again, in this day and age, how things have changed. I mean, just think when you guys started on Howard Stern, how it was okay to say certain things like this. And it just completely changed in so many ways. I think that ultimately, when you look at all your syndication, the situation was corporate took over. Corporate said, we don't want to pay anyone anymore. We could just go ahead and take something from somewhere else. And it became a process where people wanted you, but yet everyone would try to shut you down in certain ways because you were just so over the top and so unbelievable. Wouldn't you agree?
It's pretty interesting. Pretty interesting. I'll tell you, we had trouble contacting each other last night because I was in the middle of nowhere. But I worked at Villa Roma, which is in the Italian Catskills, way upstate. And man, did I destroy the place! And it was so funny, and the jokes are so ridiculous and crazy and dirty and sexy. And it was young kids and older kids. I said the audience varied from like 20 years old to 85 years old last night. And everybody right across the board loves the dirty jokes. You know, they're just fun. It's that simple.
And we were talking last night, because, again, we're kind of putting together both interviews. You, the one unbelievable thing is that it seems like you're just going to keep going. There's no stopping you. You don't look like you're close to retirement at all.
No, I'm 65, and I love it. I mean, I drove 3 hours to this show last night. I did an hour and a half on stage, and nobody stumped me. And then I drove home when I was done at the end of the night. Now I got home, I watched an hour of TV. I'm shy out of a cannon. I don't know if you have any listeners in Canada, but I'm doing two shows in Toronto at two dinner theaters, and they are so psyched up there. On the 12th and 13th of September, September 12th, September 13th, I'm working at the Park Theater on 12th. And then at the Class Act Dinner Theater on the 13th. They're both in the suburbs of Toronto. And I'm so excited to go up there because those people up there really love jokes, too. You know what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely, Jackie. And, yes, we're heard in Canada. We're heard in the U.K. So really an international show in so many ways. And people just – and how many people completely always go back to one story from the Howard Stern show that you were involved in? I'm sure you have these conversations all the time with your fans.
There's no one thing that really stands out. It just, everything was just so much fun. I'm working on a book. I got a million chapters in my book, and one is just funnier than the other. You know, it was just all one big, crazy, wonderful, wonderful time. And, you know, I got a lot of the stories on my website, jokeland.com, and I'll be putting out the notifications of my book pretty soon. But anybody that's listening right now, if you have any questions about the show or you want to be on the joke list, you'd be surprised, Neil. I answer all my email. I don't care how many I get. I answer them all. So if anybody's got a question, just email me, jokeland@AOL.com, jokeland@AOL.com. I love writing back. Sometimes people ask me a question about the show, and it's one of the chapters of my book, and I just cut and paste the chapter and send it back. You know, I love sharing this stuff. You know, I know that you people that were fans really, really enjoyed it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, absolutely, and it's unbelievable how much you're approachable. I think that's what makes it so that people want to continue to have you do events. And now the book, I think that's going to be a huge process. When do you expect it to be out? Are you just in the process?
I really don't know. I really don't know. The publishers aren't as interested as you would think. So I'll probably self-publish it, but I keep working on it and working on it. I'm sure you got a lot of listeners in Manhattan and New York and New Jersey. I'm going to be at the Cutting Room on September 14th, and that's actually almost all sold out already. There's a famous comedian named John DeBellis, not the radio guy John DeBella, but this comedian John DeBellis, who's a friend of mine, and Rich Harkaway, who's a urologist that's now a comedian. And my co-host on the show, Ian Carr, we're doing a huge show on September 14th at the Cutting Room. I don't know if you've ever been there, but that's the new Cutting Room in Manhattan. I'm telling you, Neil, it's the greatest showroom in all of Manhattan. It's 32nd and Park, and it's got the new owners. Steve Walter has just made a fantastic place. I did a couple shows. You know, I went to see the other night, James McCartney, Paul McCartney's son,
oh,
and
wow.
The place was packed, and it's just so much fun. I don't know where you live, but you should try and come to the show.
You should come to Pittsburgh. That's where I live. That's where my flagship station is. You should come to Pittsburgh. Absolutely.
You know, I was in Pittsburgh like a year ago, and I had a couple killer shows. Do you know people out there? I would drive out there and do a show.
Oh, yes. I will tweet out our comedy club, and it'll come to me in a second. It's specifically in the waterfront, and I will tweet them out tonight and say, you have to bring Jackie on, and I'll put you on the tweet, okay?
I came out there. I drove out there with my pal Gina, and we had so much fun. A girl I know, her mother lives out there in a really fancy section of town. We came out there, and I did all the radio shows. I did the morning shows. I forget one of the sports shows. Whatever they were, I think I did three shows, and I had so much fun. I hadn't been to Pittsburgh since the Funny Bone in the mid-'80s. But get me out there. Yeah, I'd love to come out there, pal. We'll have fun.
Well, definitely I'll try to hook you up in that way, Jackie. And interesting, you've talked about all your different ways that people can go. Twitter, you can go to the email list, you can call Jackie, you can email Jackie. But the other thing you talk about is you're kind of reinventing yourself as an actor, too. Did you ever think you'd be an actor?
I've always, you know, anybody that's ever been on stage loves that.
Yes.
And if you go on IMDb, right now I'm in Send No Flowers with Sean Young, and it's a great mob movie. And I'm also in a movie that's half puppets and half people, and that's on, I think it's Yahoo.com. Yahoo just started a new kind of TV web channel. I forget what it's called. I wish I had it in front of me. But I'm in this show called The Fuzz, and it's about the mob, only the mob is after the puppets. It sounds so stupid because it's crazy, but it's so well done. And it's called The Fuzz, and that's on Yahoo.com. And I'm also in a TV pilot called Pray for Us Sinners that you can see the trailer if you go to Joke. Everything's on Jokeland.com. Everything I do, you can just go to Jokeland.com. You can hear me tell jokes. And there's a page on my website that if you click it, every time you refresh it, I actually walk out onto the screen and tell another joke. So cool.
Well, absolutely, Jackie. And you have so many different ways to find people, but Jokeland.com connects it all. I went and saw Jokeland.com and said, okay, he talked about this, he talked about that, the Twitter, the whole thing, and I also plugged you out, and I'm going to plug you a lot of different times, check out all your different tweets about the different events and places you're going, and I'd love to have you back on again, Jackie, to talk about another, whenever you're trying to promote something, you're welcome to come on my show. Absolutely.
Okay, you know what? I'd love to call you the week of September 14th to plug the show at the Cutting Room, because it's a real big one, and the new club is so great, and everybody loves it. And, of course, if you get me a gig in Philly, I'll call in any time you want. I'll call up. I'll tell you a couple jokes, whatever you want me to do.
Oh, you're awesome. We should talk some news, and you do some jokes on the news, all the funny things.
Anything you want to do, you just let me know, Neil.
you're the best. Okay, so, again, Jackie, where can we find information on you again?
It's jokeland.com. If you want to get an email with jokes, just email me at jokeland@AOL.com, and you get jokes in the mail once a month. And if you want to get a joke every day at 4:20 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, National Marijuana Time, all you got to do is follow me on Twitter at Jackie Martling, JACKIEMARTLING. And if you simply want to just dial a phone and hear a dirty joke, dial 516-922-WINE. That's 516-922-9463. I'm doing it all, Neil. Look out for me, baby.
Well, you just keep going, and I'm telling you right now, I cannot wait till the book comes out. I cannot wait to promote different things, and I'm going to have a cool segment with you monthly that we can kind of really kind of joke around, but also plug your events. So thanks again for calling, Jackie.
All right, no problem, Neil. Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment on the Toll Tutor Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley, and I'm really excited to welcome the program. Again, my first ever New England Patriot, but if you're going to talk about a superstar, you're going to talk about a three-time Pro Bowler, three-time Super Bowl champion. I want to welcome the program, Matt Light. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So really excited. And so basically, we can kind of talk about the story of your career in the first segment, then go to the foundation, which we really like to highlight. But Matt, how did you get involved with football? Was it something that was always came second nature to you, or just someone discover you?
You know what? I had to think back to, you know, kind of Ohio, the area that I grew up in. And I have to believe that it was just kind of the way the kids were raised back then. I mean, you know, I think I look at it now. I have four kids of my own, and I see, you know, kind of the different things that they get involved with. And there's far more opportunities and, you know, everything else these days. But back then, I mean, look, you're a young kid, you're a young male, you're growing up, you played Pee Wee football. That's what you did, and that's what I did. And I like to, you know, run around and hit people. So what better sport for my parents to say, yeah, yeah, we'll take you there.
So it's like in Ohio or Pennsylvania, if you don't play football, really there's at one point in time, it's forget about it. It's pretty much the same deal, Ohio and Pennsylvania football. You're going to be involved in football in some sort of way, so you were involved in it. But when did you finally see, you know what, this might be a career?
Well, you know what, I think that comes different for everybody. For me, you know, literally play the game because I loved it. It was always fun, like everybody else starts out. And then it wasn't until probably my junior year that, you know, I started to get a little bit of interest from, you know, letters showing up in the mail, coaches saying things, people coming by practice. But, you know, look, I grew up in a very small farming community that, you know, really didn't. I didn't have anybody I could look up to say, hey, I want to do what that guy did. There was a guy that had gone to Wittenberg that was a year ahead of me, who is now our head football coach. You know, for the high school team back there now. But at the time, he was literally the only guy that I could look up to and say, hey, you know, you've been there. You've been through this process a little bit. And so, you know, for me, it was basically got this awesome opportunity to go play at Purdue and play in the Big Ten. And it wasn't until probably towards the end of my college career that I started thinking that the pros, you know, could, you know, possibly be an option.
Very interesting. So basically, when you were in high school, you weren't saying, I'm going to be the superstar, three-time Super Bowl champion. You never had that in your mindset. You were just playing football because you love football, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, and I think, honestly, I mean, everybody does it different, of course. You know, some guys grow up always, you know, saying that they're going to be that guy or whatever it is, right? And that just wasn't me. I mean, I was so entrenched with, you know, the way of life growing up in a small town and hunting and being outdoors and all that kind of stuff that, you know, football was something that I really enjoyed. I was good at it, you know, had success and all that kind of stuff. But I hadn't seen a professional game until I played in one. And that's even
really?
Kind of college, you know. First time I saw a college football game, you know, I was playing in it. Same thing with the National Football League and any experience. I mean, you know, the Super Bowl that I played in my rookie year was the first, you know, time I had ever seen, I didn't see a halftime show, but, you know, been a part of that whole process, you know. So for me, it was all new as it was happening.
I mean, that's wild to know that. I guess that's why it's good we're learning about your background in outdoorsman, and we're going to talk about it in the next segment. But I think that ultimately you were playing the sport, but yet it's not something you ultimately watched all the time, and you didn't get the opportunity and the experience of doing that. So you said you were a small town. How big was your high school, by the way?
You know what? Our town was the county seat. So, you know, I graduated with, you know, probably close to 280 kids in my class, which, you know, a lot of people say that's a fairly sizable school, but it's the only school, you know, in the area. So, you know, when you put it in that perspective, you know, again, it was a great community, a great town, a lot of pride in what we did and who we were. But we definitely didn't have the tradition of being a powerhouse in football. I'm not sure we won more than four games ever in a season. So, yeah, you know, football was big, but, you know, it definitely wasn't something that most of the kids grew up thinking, you know, this is what I'm going to do, this is who I am.
So where in Ohio did you grow up? I forgot to ask you about it.
I grew up in Greenville, Ohio, which is basically west central Ohio. You know, my personal house was, you know, not far from the border in Indiana. Actually had a guy, you know, as far as other people from the area, you know, Curtis Enos, who, you know, went on to Penn State, played in the Big Ten, went to a school much smaller than ours, graduated with about 50 kids in his class, and was Mr. Football of Ohio. So, you know, had a little exposure to the guys and you know, kind of the lifestyle and things of that nature. But, again, never really got into it. I was always more involved with, you know, friends and family, the outdoors and things of that nature.
Very, very interesting. And so basically Greenville, Ohio's right on the border. So a small town, but yet big town in a way, because there's no other high schools in the vicinity. So you went ahead and took the scholarship at Purdue. Was that a huge change for you just to be part of college football? And I mean, the atmosphere, especially Purdue at that time, and how big being in the Big Ten and the expectations and everything?
Yeah, you know, it was. I mean, especially for a guy like me, you know, I get there and as a true freshman end up, you know, starting the tight end and playing the tight end position, which was completely new for me, and learning that, you know, skilled side of it was interesting. But yeah, you know, the whole transition was huge because we didn't really have, you know, we didn't do anything like they do at the college level, obviously, but we didn't, you know, train, you know, the way a lot of schools train now at the high school level. So getting into a routine and going through the workouts and, you know, just the physical demand that's put on you from a student athlete perspective and everything else was quite a shock.
It definitely was, in a way, in the playbook and then the campus. It's a large campus at Purdue, and to be able to balance athletics and academics, and it seemed like you were a pretty strong-willed individual being the outdoorsman and family, so academics were an important part of your life as well, right?
And that's where the decision came down to go to Purdue. You know, I had a father, you know, have a father that's, you know, been an engineer his entire life and run an engineering group, you know, not far from, you know, our hometown. So, you know, definitely grew up with, you know, kind of that background, and Purdue was a no-brainer on that end. And really, honestly, you know, the professors don't care who you are off the field, so to speak, or on the field. They just want to know that you're there to learn and you're going to get it all done. So it was very demanding, you know, from a, you know, from that end of it. That side of the equation wasn't, and you know, and not having a major that, you know, not to put any other majors down, but, you know, having a major is very demanding with the labs and everything else. I mean, it took a lot of time, but, you know, definitely something I took a lot of pride in, you know, be able to graduate in 2000, you know, with an industrial technology degree and kind of, you know, have that and move on from that to go into the league. You know, that was a very fulfilling experience all around.
So you were definitely what the NCAA would call a student athlete, sounds like. Not like, you know, certain, and especially picking a university like Purdue, you have the expectations. That's a very, you could basically do a talk on that alone to kids and say, you know what, when I went to Purdue, I was a student athlete, and student was the more important thing. Some of the universities aren't like that, and I'm sure you wish, especially when you were competing against some of those universities, we're not going to mention them, Matt, that the student was not part of the athlete component. So I think you were happy that you were in a place where that was the case.
Well, you know, and look, I mean, you know, everybody knows they're getting themselves into, you know, the many schools will not, you know, they're going to throw the academic side of it, they're going to throw the student side out there, you know, a lot. But at the end of the day, we all know that what's most important is the bottom line, winning games, and that's going to take precedence over anything else. It's just the opposite of Purdue from that model, and that is, look, we're going to make sure that this young man that's walking into this system is going to become as good an athlete as he can, and he's going to have the opportunities, and he's going to have the facilities and everything else at literally the top notch. You won't find a better place than Purdue when it comes to the facilities and the investment they put in there for their student athletes. But the other side of it is that, hey, we're going to be far more impressed with his ability or her ability to leave this university being able to hang their hat on a degree that, you know, nobody can touch. You know, nobody can put it down. Nobody can say anything about it because, you know, really the culture there is that you're going to work for everything you get on the academic side. Nothing's going to be handed to you. And I respected that, and I enjoyed that aspect.
Well, absolutely. It's something where you have that expectation. And that's amazing because I did not know about Purdue. So, Matt, that's great to look at universities where student is important, not just athlete, because, again, it gets a bad rap altogether, the whole NCAA. And then you never think of a school like that doing that. So that's a great, I guess, plug for Purdue University, and to say that, you know, if you're choosing a school based on academics and athletics, it sounds like it's a good choice for you.
Yeah, you know, it always starts at the top too. You know, they got a heck of a president now. We had a heck of a president when I was there, and you know, that directive comes from the top down. And you know, really, you know, even Coach Hazel and, you know, his new staff that's there this year, I can see from them already that that's not just something they say. They truly walk the walk.
Okay, so we go specifically from there, and we go into the whole situation with you finally see you're going to be an NFL player. What happens next, Matt? Basically, you basically know that you're going to be a possible NFL player. It's your junior year when you figured this out?
Yeah, I would say. I mean, look, we go and kind of laid an egg in the Outback Bowl. And soon after that, you know, had a lot of, you know, agents that were trying to make the contact, you know, through a third party or however it works. And then, you know, you're going into your senior year and you start getting, you know, a lot more of attention from, you know, the different publications and things of that nature. Look, you know, I was lucky. I mean, I got to play with the Drew Brees of the world and, you know, an offensive line that, you know, literally gave up like 7 sacks an entire season, you know, and, you know, just with a great group of guys as a senior collegiate athlete that, you know, we got a lot of attention. And so basically went through the whole recruiting process from, you know, the agent perspective and got to know that and started looking at it and saying, hey, you know, this literally looks legit. And before I knew it, the draft was there. I actually trained in Pittsburgh for 2 months at the UPMC Center. So got a lot of familiarity with Oakland, stayed in Oakland and, you know, trained in the Pittsburgh area. My roommate in my first year at Purdue was a Purdue guy. The Zatelli family and had two sons that played for Purdue from, you know, the hardworking Zatelli family. Those guys are Pittsburgh through and through. But anyway, you know, basically went through that whole process, got ready for the draft, went into the draft feeling great, and, you know, shoot, got picked up, you know, midway through the second round. So great experience overall.
Well, absolutely a great experience. Now your dream that was really not a dream, but I guess a shock in certain ways. You never thought in your whole life to say, I'm going to play in the NFL, especially when you never watched a live game in the NFL. So basically take us into this process. You get drafted and then you go to the NFL and you see, I honestly believe what helped you, Matt, to be such a successful player is I hear about how important it is to have the NFL brain and to understand things how they work. And especially in a workmanship position that you played in the NFL, it really helped to be a Purdue grad, wouldn't you agree, especially going into the Belichick system?
Well, I mean, I think anytime it's your cerebral or you take, you know, that approach first and you're willing to put the work in, I mean, that suits itself well to Bill's system and, you know, the Patriot way and everything else. But look, I mean, I came into an organization that, you know, again, I wasn't versed on, you know, the history and everything else, you know, as some guys were, but I walked into it looking at it saying, this is a great opportunity. I mean, you know, well, the first impression was this is the worst facility in the world, but they're building a new one, so I felt pretty good about that. But, you know, I looked at it and I said, you know, hey, look, here's a great opportunity. I mean, we got great owners. You can see that they're totally invested in, you know, this team and what we put on the field and what we do off the field. And, you know, they had a great, you know, the first thing I did when I got to New England was, you know, meet the Kraft family and see the work that they did within the community. And I just thought, you know, this is so much more than what I really thought it would be. And then we go out and we had the success we had, you know, year one, won a Super Bowl as a rookie, you know, starting a left tackle, taking over for a guy in Bruce Armstrong that was one of the most, you know, just well-respected linemen in Patriot history. I mean, it was a lot to digest, but it was all good stuff.
Okay, so when we get back, we'll go a little bit more into your career quickly and then go right into the foundation. You have a great story, Matt. Maybe you need to write a memoir someday because it seems like, especially when not many people will have that kind of story for the NFL. You're listening to the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment on the Total Tutor Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment on the Total Tutor Show, TotalTutor.net for more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook. And we're with Matt Light, and I mean, I would not have thought this, especially to hear about his story, hear about the student and student-athlete, and amazingly enough, getting to the Patriots and preparing and getting the right break, and before you know it, you become a Super Bowl champion. So that must have been unbelievable.
You know, it was. I mean, we were talking about, you know, another big transition, you know, going from, you know, a guy that was literally living, you know, check to check, you know, based on what the university would give us and, you know, how we're going to scrounge up enough money to go out one night to, you know, living that lifestyle, man. You're in the National Football League. You got a lot of attention. You know, you have a lot of success. Everything's going well. I got a wife that, you know, gave birth to our first child, you know, months after the big game. So there was a lot to be thankful for, man, a lot to be proud of, too.
Okay, so let's go specifically from there. So you go on your career, 3 Pro Bowls, 3 Super Bowls, and when you decided life after football, were you ready? Did you say it's the time?
Yeah, you know, look, I mean, I was fortunate, you know, my 11-year career, played in the Super Bowl 5 times, lost the AFC Championship game, you know, once. I mean, did it all, every way you could do it. I mean, won it every way you could win it, lost it every way you could lose it, first round of the playoffs, second round of the playoffs, AFC Championship game. I mean, you name it. I mean, I just was able to do it with, you know, some of the best guys, you know, best guys on the planet I was able to, you know, play the game with. So that was, you know, all in all, a great career. And I looked at, you know, the lockout season and that freedom that, you know, we all enjoyed as players, which, you know, wasn't free. I mean, it definitely cost us a lot. But, you know, I looked at that time and I said, this is what real life's about, you know, and this is doing it on your own and not having all those comforts of, you know, the clubhouse and everything that's in the locker room and all the assistance that you get, you know, from training and everything else. And I said, man, I'm going to give it one last shot. Played my 11th season, you know, darn near won it all again, and was satisfied with, you know, kind of where I was at in life and ready to, you know, turn the page and go on to something bigger and, you know, maybe better. Who knows?
So basically life after football led to this foundation. So tell us about the Matt Light Foundation and how, surprisingly enough, that once you get to work running a foundation, being involved in these other things, retirement doesn't seem like retirement. As you said, you're busy as can be.
Yeah, it's been an amazing process. You know, going on year 2 of you know, being out of the league, this second season now. You know, we're having played and you know, definitely settling into life after football. And the foundation was something that, you know, look, after winning the Super Bowl in 2001. 2002, you know, we formed this foundation and man, it's just transformed into something absolutely incredible. It's a thing I'm probably the most proud of in my life. And the work that we do and the partnerships that we've, you know, forged over the years and the impact that we've been able to make, you know, has just been unbelievable to watch. And you know, anybody that works with kids and anybody that works with kids the way we do and is for a longer period of time as we have, you know, look, it's like anything else. It's tough at times. It's, you know, it's challenging. It's there's days you wonder why you keep doing it, but the reward is always there somehow, some way. And like I said, man, it's just something I'm truly passionate about. And we get kids in the outdoors. I mean, it's hard to put it in a nutshell. MattLightFoundation.org gives you a lot of information, but, you know, we've got programs upon programs and programs that, you know, really get to the heart of what these kids go through. And it's not a one-hit wonder. We don't host a camp or do something for one day. I mean, we get these kids in the fold, in some cases, for 4 years, and you really get to know them. And, you know, they put a lot into you, and you put a lot into them. And, you know, at the end of the day, you walk away from it saying, you know what, we've made an impact in his life. And man, he's made an impact in mine. And that's something that you don't pay for that. You got to experience it.
Okay, so you said you started the foundation about 2001, 2002. The process when you first looked to start the foundation, I guess we already know from your first part of the show why the outdoors. You love the outdoors. So putting that together to help kids, what a great mix.
You know, it is. And listen, I mean, it's an awesome responsibility to do a lot of the things that outdoorsmen do. You know, I use the outdoors because, yeah, I've never heard anybody that walks outside and says, man, this sucks. You know, take a big, deep, you know, breath of air and you've been sitting in an office all day. I mean, people, human beings long to be outdoors. And so many of us don't get the opportunity to do that. And even in my day-to-day life, you get so busy with sitting behind a desk or doing office-type work. getting back to the roots of what really inspires me and being outdoors and sharing those experiences with young people and showing them a different way and using that to teach them lessons about responsibility and ethics and accountability and ultimately how to become leaders within their own communities and their own circles. That's just something that came naturally. And, man, we exploit the heck out of it. And it's really worked. And like I said, it's an awesome responsibility to go out and shoot a bow and arrow if a kid's never done it. And they'll do anything. I mean, they'll stay in line. If I say, I'm going to take that away if you guys keep messing up, you know, they're going to get in line. And it's a good incentive, but ultimately it's just a great teaching tool.
So you think that you develop structure and discipline through the outdoors because it really teaches you patience, first of all. It also teaches you the ability to think on your feet because to survive in the outdoors is not always the easiest thing in the world. And it ultimately gets rid of some of the comforts of home and to understand adversity. Right? Would you say all those things really are part of the foundation in ways?
Yeah, you know, I think you hit it on the head, and I think getting them outside their comfort zone is a big one. You know, look, you arrive from I think back to one of our groups from Tennessee, and we have these four young men that arrive in the middle of nowhere, Ohio. You know, cornfields all around them, woods, crazy sounds, mosquitoes, ticks. You know, all the stuff that you enjoy as an outdoorsman. They're literally sitting there just wondering how in the world did I ever get myself into this. And 2 days later, you know, you see them come out of their shell. And, you know, 2 years later, you see them just, you know, just truly enjoy every moment that they're in camp, you know, around all their people. And it's a safe place and it's a sacred place. And it's everything you mentioned and then some.
Wow. So what types of kids are involved in the foundation? Which ones do you look at to work with? Are they areas that have never been outdoors before? A lot of times the kids you're finding to be involved in this?
Yeah, you know, it's a good question. It's an interesting one, too, and how we view it's probably a little different than other organizations. But we really, you know, we target these kids. I say that they might have set the house on fire, but they didn't burn it down. You know, my clinical term is knucklehead. But what I really like to say is that, you know, look, we go after these kids that teachers and guidance counselors and people that run organizations like the Boys and Girls Club and any after-school program, the ones that actually work with them, they would look at you and say, you know, this kid isn't a bad kid, or he's a decent kid, but, you know, he needs to have a little direction, needs to have somebody in his life. You know, needs a program like yours to really keep him on track, because a lot of these kids are from single-parent homes, lower, you know, socioeconomic background. I mean, it's just a lot of things that a lot of people suffer from, and they're not all like that. It wouldn't be a blanket statement to say that, you know, all of our kids are like this, and they're all from the inner city. Some of them aren't, some of them are. And, you know, the best part about that is you get all these kids from all these various backgrounds. You put them in the middle of the woods, bring them in from all over the country, not just one area, and they all realize that, hey, man, we all suffer from the same things, and we all view life the same way in some ways, and we're different in others, and, you know, it just really works. The model really works.
So tell me some success stories of your program since you started it.
Well, you know, I look at each and every kid that we work with, and I say somewhere there's a success. Now, in saying that, we've had many kids that haven't been able to fulfill some of the different programs, and we have many different programs, but the one that I always key in on and the one that we really I take pride in all of them, but the one that I really enjoy is our leadership camp. It's called Camp Bohoicus, and it's where we bring these kids in. They spend 4 years in our program. We make a big commitment. They make a big commitment. And at the end of the day, you see these wide-eyed, you know, somewhat troubled, you know, just riddled with all kind of little holes from, you know, things in their life that have been difficult that they had to overcome or hadn't been able to overcome. And 4 years later, you know, they walk away making great decisions, having a game plan for life, you know, staying in contact, asking to come back and become counselors, and just really taking the right steps. And when you see that happen firsthand, and again, you've built that relationship over years. And we've built that relationship over years. I mean, you can't replace it. I mean, you can't. It's so hard to find that in other things. And when you see it firsthand, I mean, that's a success story. I mean, you see that kid go from, you know, shy, awkward, you know, maybe insecure, unsure of their future, to really, truly having that game plan. It's awesome to see, man, each and every time. Never gets old.
Well, and I'm sure the passion you have, Matt, especially when you got to retire, how much more hands-on you're involved in the foundation, right?
Yeah, it's great. You know, I just got back from Ohio. We're back out here on the East Coast, and you know, we spend the whole summers there, and you know, most of that time is working with these kids and running these camps. And you know, after 2 weeks in the woods, you look forward to having, you know, air conditioned home and the, you know, comforts of the, you know, quote unquote real world. But it's a magical time, man. It's an unbelievable just moment that we all get to share, and it is sacred, man. It's been great.
I taught at a leadership camp in Tunkhannock, Pennsylvania. It's right outside of in the Poconos, and without there was electricity, but a lot of the creature comforts weren't there, and I really learned a lot. And it really gets you to think about all they're just do is do activities, lots of fun activities, from sports to outdoorsmen and all these different things, where you're away from everything else, the television, all these things, and it really, the kids learn so much from this. I really believe that.
Yeah, you do, man. And it's, you know, from playing paintball and getting to shoot each other, you know, with some paint, to, you know, riding dirt bikes and then doing career educational tours and camp projects and things like that. It's an experience that, you know, these kids truly, you know, they truly love it. And we do too, man. We get as much as they do out of it.
So Matt, what is your ultimate goal of the foundation? Where do you want to see it go?
You know, right now we're working hard to just really be able to long-term, you know, and when I say long-term, I hope I mean, you know, seven generations of young lights to come, you know, 100 generations, whatever it is, till the end of time, right? Let's think big here. But, you know, put this foundation in a position where we will survive forever, because we have a system in which, you know, we can win at all times. And that comes down to basically, you know, going out there and continue to do the work we do, raise the money to fund how we do the things that we do, but always have this 600-acre facility open that not only we can use as a foundation, but we have so many other nonprofits that use it year-round. It's always booked. And to just continue that process and make sure that it's always there. So it's been, it's been a dream of mine and my family and all the people that have worked hard on it. So, you know, we're going to make sure that, you know, even when we're long gone, that this thing will be open and those opportunities will still exist.
That's fantastic. So where can our listeners donate and learn more about the foundation, Matt?
Oh, that'd be great. You know what? We've got a donate now button on our website, which is mattlightfoundation.org. And you can also check out, you know, our programs, our events, and the different things that we do. We have one huge signature event that we have coming up. It's our celebrity shootout. This is our ninth year. It's an unbelievable event. It's where we really get all of our funding to do what we do, and it's basically getting, you know, all my former teammates and other local celebrities to come out and do a sporting clays tournament. We make things blow up. It's golfing with a shotgun. So between the events that we do and our website donate now button, that's how people can get involved and check out who we are and you know, support what we do.
Well, Matt, best of luck to you. Love to have you back to tell us more about the foundation another time and ways that we can get involved. So thanks again for calling, Matt.
I appreciate it. All the best to you, and you know what? I'll even say I hope your Steeler Nation does well this season. They were always fun to go up against.
See, Matt, you're not playing anymore. You could say that. You would get a lot of heat if you're still playing for the Patriots. So thanks for calling. It was a lot of fun.
All right, boss.
Take care, man. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Tutor Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Beach Lifestyle Celebrity segment on the Total Tutor Network. TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor Neil S. Haley. Facebook. And really, really, I was talking off air to this guest, and he's a former New York Jet NFL player, played at UVA. And he's doing some great things with his foundation, so I thought I'd bring him on the program and see how our listeners can help his foundation. So I want to welcome to the program Tavon Mason. Tavon, how are you?
I'm doing good, Neil. How are you doing today? Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm fantastic. Again, this is we're getting back in the routine. School starts next week for my kids, for my one kid, and then my other the week after. My wife is back, teacher in services, so I have a quiet house. So I like that. The morning's not great being up earlier, but now it's quiet. So, Tavon, I wanted to go specifically, tell us a little bit of your background, and then we'll go right into your foundation.
Okay, like we were saying off air, you know, I was born and raised in Baltimore, Maryland. I'm the youngest of two kids, and my mom and dad. I graduated from Woodlawn High School, and I was accepted a full scholarship to the University of Virginia. Was, you know, just like probably a lot of the athletes that's in the NFL was, you know, All-American coming from the state of Maryland. And actually going to college was like my first time playing full-time the wide receiver position. So that was something new to grasp. Because in high school, I played all over the place, running back, quarterback a little bit, corner, safety. So really buckling down to one position in college, you know, took a lot learning the position and learning the techniques and the fundamentals of it. And going to UVA, you know, was a great, got to play with a lot of great guys from Anthony Poindexter, Thomas Jones, you know, Matt Shaw, who's in the NFL now. You know, we talked about Heath Miller being one of my teammates, to getting a chance to, you know, be with the Jets. So, and that's where my role led to.
So you played for the Jets, and then after that, it was life after football. And was it a surprise that your career was short? What was your thought process, or just as things happen in the NFL? I hear about it all the time.
My thought process, and it, you know, I kind of like, I guess, like buckled down, and I got myself together from the jump. Like, I know a lot of young guys can't take that. Like, if their career do end early, they don't know how to accept it, so they kind of fall into like a funk, so you can say. I kind of knew how the game worked and just watching guys before me and hearing from other guys. You know, I always thinking of another plan. You know, I did get a chance to play in the indoor football league for the Baltimore Mariners in 2009. But afterwards, it was just, all right, now it's time to buckle down and get stuff rolling. I didn't want to get caught behind the eight ball of not having a plan and being stuck for some years like some guys do in all the sports, and then they got to rebuild themselves up. So, you know, I came back home. Got into coaching, not directly for like a school or a program. One of my trainers has a facility, and I went up there and was helping a lot of the high school guys out, the receivers, and, you know, still they were running routes for quarterbacks just to fine tune them. So that's where I started when I came back home, the life after football.
Well, Tavon, we all know it's a business now. Lots of parents want to see their kids go to college, play college football,
right,
or in the NFL. So they look at people like yourself. You're a pro football player. They want your
right.
experience. They want your coaching. They want you to say, this
right.
is how I got here. You're seeing that as a big business itself right now, aren't you?
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, like I said, I'm back at my high school. I've been coaching here like the last 3 years. And they definitely do. I have my parents and even friends that have kids that text me or Facebook me, you know, and if you have time, can you come, you know, help my kid out with speed drills or catching or things like that. And the unfortunate thing with doing the foundation, also coaching here at my high school, it's kind of hard, you know, to be able to get around to everybody to try to help them out. And I tell them, I wish I had the time to definitely come help your kid out, but it's kind of hard with, you know, my own requirements, things that I have planned already.
Okay, so Tavon, why did you start the foundation when you were with the Jets or after you got back?
After I got back, I always had a vision of what I wanted to do. Even in college, I was going around down to Charlottesville, Albemarle County, visiting high schools. Even one of my cousins, their basketball team came down to Albemarle County. They played in a AAU clinic. And I talked to his team after the game. And even here, I went around talking to a lot of my friends that taught in the schools were asking me to come talk to their kids. So I got started with that. I started officially, you know, made it a true organization in 2010 for my first visit to a pediatric hospital here in Baltimore. And I took a tour of the hospital, you know, and got to meet some great kids that are going through some tough times for, like, surgeries, injuries. Can't do the things that, you know, like, we can do or your kids can do and are in these hospitals for, like, months. And after that, I still was trying to pinpoint what I wanted to do with the foundation, and I finally came up with it last spring. I wanted to get kids active, you know, get kids active, eating healthy, being healthy, and pushing the education piece.
So looking at the childhood obesity rate, and you're like, this is something I got to really get these kids active. It's just awful. So looking back.
Right. And, yeah, it one day I was in a school, and it was elementary school, and this was kind of like triggered my mission to be that, to help kids get active and, you know, host my own sports fit days. It was a young kid that was like third or fourth grade, and they weighed the same amount pound-wise that me and you weigh. I mean, I'm like 190, and this kid was like already 180, 183
oh, wow.
in elementary school. Yeah, and that's the same thing. I said, my mouth just dropped, and I'm just like, it's not cool. This isn't cool at all. This is like, what is going on? So in the spring of last year, 2012, I held my first sports fit day at one of the elementary schools in Baltimore City, where the principal allowed me to take over the entire school. And I bought in my college degree, some of my football jerseys, even like Jets pitches that I signed for them, and just told them about my life, but then pinpointed, you know, the good things about eating healthy, and being active, and also the importance of education and taking school seriously.
So you're basically doing fit days. Is that what your foundation's doing, or you also have some after-school programs as well?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to formulate now and get to some of the schools. I'm trying to get to the point where I can get into the school full-time. And it doesn't have just to be Baltimore. I want to start branching out to Maryland as a state, you know, D.C. and Northern Virginia, to get in school full-time, because they're closing a lot of the recreations here in Baltimore, and the physical education classes are starting to drop also. So I wanted, you know, to be an outside source to come in and give these kids what they need. This past May, I just did a sports fit day at one of the elementary schools in Baltimore County, and I had the luxury of having one of the anchors from Channel 2 News do a news segment on it, and it played on the news, and it's also on the website of me, you know, doing different relay races, different things with the kids outside, you know, and they loved it. It was a fifth-grade class, and then after we took a break, and I sat the kids down, told them about myself, the reason why I started doing my sports fit days, you know, and even writing my book that I just wrote, because it was based around, you know, my dad passed a few years ago from a heart issue, and I know that's, you know, kind of prevalent in my family, and I wanted to kind of like speak on why we should be healthy and start eating healthy for, like, you know, extending our life.
And one thing that we, my business partner and I are doing is we're trying to help feed kids, especially kids with the obesity issues. We have a health and wellness company, and that's one thing we're trying to do. So we'll have to definitely reach out to Tavon and see how we can help out. And also he's part of another foundation called Mission G. So he's doing a lot of help. And one of his focuses is trying to eliminate childhood obesity. So he has the same goals as you, for sure. Tavon, I'm on the board. And so we'll have to kind of connect back through this. So your process is looking at the missing component. Oh, let's get rid of phys ed because we're worried about their academics. But these kids are playing video games all the time. They're not getting the chance to exercise, and they're eating horrible foods. And so you want to educate them, tell them about the dangers, but also tell them about the results of you being so active, right? That's another component of it.
Right, and that's a thing. You know, I'm trying to get to the point where they do get a chance to be active and be kids. Just like you said, yeah, we, you know, we all worry about the academics, but if we don't, even if we don't consider their health, they're not going to make it academically, because we, you know, and I know that, you know, starting off eating something, eating a good meal to start the day off, you know, kind of like determines how the rest of that day is going to go. Another component, you know, that I also added in, I held my own health expo here at my high school, because my one of my assistants, she had said, "Hey, I know it's great that you're doing the sports fit days in the school. You know, you go around talking to the kids." And she hit me with something that kind of like made me stand back. She said, "But what are we going to do when the kids go home?" She said, "No, you can give them different literature on the good of eating good, but they still have to go home to where they're eating the processed foods, or the parents are just giving them whatever they want." And I was like, "You're right." So I decided, you know, let me put a health expo, my own health expo together. So I did my Tavon Made Some Lovely Kids health expo last summer, and I had, you know, different healthcare professionals come out. I had a person that came from Mount Washington Pediatric Hospital from their Way Smart program, which is a program to help kids that's fighting obesity, to put them in a program and their parents to, like, you know, teach them the right portions and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm not only targeting the kids, I'm also trying to get through to the parents to try to change some of the food that they buy in the house, and change some of the things they do.
So it's a definite great mission you're on Tavon, to go out and do this. And how can our listeners help you out so that they can be part of this and donate to the foundation or help out in any way?
You know, I just uploaded, started my website. They can go to www.TavonMasonLovesTheKids.org, and the the website breaks down, like they show all the pictures of me in the community, things that I do. You know, they can donate if they want to. Even if they're in the area, they would like to come to an event, they can come out. I think another thing that I help a lot of families, my e-book that I just uploaded and is available on all tablets and smartphones. It's titled, you know, Former New York Jets Wide Receiver Tavon Mason Presents the 60th Day Promise, A Guide to a Healthier Lifestyle and Family. And basically the 60th Day Promise is trying to get families to at least promise me, like, they do something for, like, an hour a day that's active with their kids to try to, like, reunite the families to do things together, and also jumpstart that, like, I call it that longevity or extended life. It's available on Nooks, Kindles, and iBooks. And I basically just...